tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go. All right, now we are going to get right on with the show here and introduce our presenters. Susie Richmond is the Executive Director of Neighborhood Cats. Having served in that role since 2010, she oversees hands-on TNR programs in New York City, Jersey City, and on the island of Maui, as well as using her prior Madison Avenue advertising experience to write, among other things, crowdfunding appeals to help the many sick and injured cats who come Neighborhood Cats' way. One of her favorite projects currently is a veterinary scholarship program designed to train community cat-oriented vets on high-volume spay-neuter techniques. When she's not in the office, you can find Susie out in the fields of Maui, where she recently passed the 1,000 cats trapped mark. And then we have Brian Cordes, who serves as the Neighborhood Cats National Program Director and Susie Richmond's husband. Back in 1999, while working in Manhattan as both an attorney and a video director, Brian co-founded Neighborhood Cats after TNRing a colony near where he lived. Except for a six-year stint as a grants manager for PetSmart Charities, he has been with the organization ever since. He has authored or co-authored handbooks on grassroots TNR, community TNR, and return to field programs. You can always find him online, where he regularly presents both basic and advanced webinars on all things trap, neuter, return in partnership with the Community Cats Podcast. All right, I'm going to turn this over to Brian now.
Okay, thank you so much, Stacey, and thanks everybody for taking time out of your weekend to learn a little bit more about strategizing with trap, neuter, return. And just to let you know, today's presentation is part of a series that Neighborhood Cats is doing with the Community Cats Podcast on the more strategic side of trap, neuter, return. And we've already done a presentation on building a grassroots movement, you know, getting the public involved and what you need to do to support widespread practice of TNR. And you can find that recording at the communitycatspodcast.com. Today, we're doing the targeted TNR. And in September, we'll be talking about Return to Field, which is a shelter-based program that involves releasing community cats back into the community. Also want to let you know that you can download this book, Neighborhood Cats TNR Handbook, for free. And it goes into everything that is covered in those three webinars, including targeting. So if you like having a book and you want to read about it in a little more detail, you can download that. For those of you who like the hardcover copy, it's still available on Amazon.com. And Stacey, I checked and I'm still consistently within the top 2.2 million books being sold on Amazon. So, you know, go feel free if you like the print version to go ahead and get that. Okay, so let's get into today's topic. And the problem that we're trying to address is a common one for all TNR programs, which is too many cats and too few resources, right? Especially surgeries or trappers or equipment or funds or whatever it might be that we need to practice TNR. Almost always the number of cats in need outpaces the resources that are available to address them. So how do we solve this problem? How do we start to approach it? And that's what we're talking about today, which is targeting. And the basic idea is the way that we define targeting is that you're maximizing your impact by concentrating your limited resources in an area of high need. So in this little graphic here, you could see how at one house, there's a large concentration of cats, whereas there may be an equal number elsewhere, but they're sort of scattered around other areas. So with targeting, we're trying to work in that area that's really a high need. That's where we're going to focus most of our resources. Of course, we'll go into this in a lot more detail. The elements of targeting are, well, number one, that idea that resources are limited, and also that idea of focusing them. And that's something that is still a challenge for a lot of TNR programs. A lot of programs are run on what I call a kind of first come, first serve basis, where, you know, whoever calls for help is, you kind of get in line and then you start to address those people as they call and not necessarily focused on any one area. Targeting is not like that. Targeting, you choose where you're going to work, not the people who are contacting you. And when we're talking about concentrating, we're talking about a geographic area, you know, like a neighborhood or a factory or a park or something like that. And we're talking about high need, which typically translates into a relatively high or above average number of free roaming cats or not altered. And the reason we're doing all this is to maximize our impact. And We can define that as fewer cats in the environment, lower intake into local shelters, fewer complaints about cats, whatever metric, and we'll talk about metrics more later. But we want to, with the resources we have, with the surgeries available to us, the trappers, et cetera, we want to have as much impact as possible. The idea of targeting is not something that's new or unique to animal welfare, and it's been used in a lot of other contexts. And I think that's important to understand so that you can see how it can be applied to the work that we do. And what you're looking at on your screen right now is an example of targeting in policing. So this is a graphic of New York City, and this was during a period of high crime back in the 2000s at the beginning of the millennium. And what the police department did is they plotted out on a map here everywhere there was a homicide, and then what type of weapon was used. So all the little green dots are where somebody was shot to death. I know it's a little gruesome, but we'll see beyond that. And you can see how it's not scattered. That kind of serious crime was not scattered randomly throughout the community. But if you look towards the bottom of your screen in the middle of Brooklyn, you can see there's a real concentration of that. And then if you look towards the top between Manhattan and the Bronx, you also see a real density of where these homicides took place. So in response to this mapping, the police department focused their resources in those high homicide areas. And the map on your left is a heat map of police activity as measured by stops and stop and frisks, which of course was very controversial policy, but basically they would flood police officers into these neighborhoods, and wherever they thought they had a reasonable suspicion or not, they would stop people and frisk them. And you can see in by the where they did it more, it's darker. And where they found and recovered guns, you can see all the green is where they recovered firearms. And now look at that against where the crimes took place, and you can see there's obviously a direct correlation. The most police activity was in that area in Brooklyn and that area in the Bronx that we talked about before. So this is an example of focusing limited resources in a high need area. And the results were, obviously the practice was controversial, but the results were a sharp decrease in homicides. So it was, from a policing point of view, if not a constitutional one, it was a very successful program. This is another example of how you could use targeting and how it is used in another context. This is mapping poverty in New York City. And the darker the area, the higher the level of number of people who are living below the poverty line. And you can see, again, it's not evenly distributed. And interestingly, a lot of it overlaps with where we found the high crime areas, right? So if you're looking at this from like, where should we be setting up social welfare offices, or where should we be directing food pantries or health services or whatever it might be, you can be guided by this map so that you're not unnecessarily, putting a clinic in an area that doesn't need it as much as somewhere else. I want to contrast the kind of targeting we're talking about today with a different kind of targeting that sometimes people get confused about, and that's called demographic targeting. And this is where you're not concentrating on a physical area, but you're concentrating on a certain type of person. And this is a chart from a podcast that no longer exists, but it's a great example of how you gather information about your audience in order to then appeal to advertisers or to let them know this is, the kind of audience we have. And you can, if you have a product that appeals to them, this is a good show for you. And you can see from this chart that if you were trying to market to married men who have children, and especially if they were between the ages of 31 and 55, had some college, and were relatively high income, this would be a good place for you to focus your advertising budget, your resources, because that's the predominant audience of this show. So that is demographic targeting. Obviously, geographically, this could be spread out all over the place. So when we're talking about targeted TNR, It's important to keep in mind, we're talking about geography. We're not talking about demographics. So would we target the downtown district of a city, as you see on the left? The answer, of course, is yes. If we're talking about, let's start a program to help elderly caretakers, that would not be the kind of targeting we're talking about. Now, you may want to have that kind of program as a kind of social service, but when we're talking about having the most impact on the cat population, we're more focused on geography than we are on kind of human characteristics of caretakers. So let's start in our journey with the cats here by looking at, you know, what we might consider a typical backyard colony. And here we have 10 cats. None of them are altered. None of them are spayed or neutered. And they've, you know, we've been in this neighborhood, and the question is, well, what's going to happen if we don't do anything, right? If we just watch and see what goes on. And from some theory, it would be like, well, if you have 10 cats and you don't do anything, you're going to end up with a lot more cats, right? And that comes to kind of a myth that's out there. Well, you know, I'm sure everybody has heard of this one, which is, you know, if you have one unspayed female cat and they, you know, produce 2 litters a year and they go on for however long, they're going to have 6 zillion cats, right? In this particular chart, it's like one cat in 8 years becomes 2 million. So that, you know, the value of this is meant to convey the value of spay neuter. But it's very important for you to understand that this is a myth. It's not what happens in reality. And why is that? And this is a very important concept to understand if you're going to grasp the importance of the kind of targeting that we're talking about today. And that's that every environment has what's called a carrying capacity. And that's the number, in terms of what we're talking about, that's the number of cats that available food and shelter can support at a given location. So, and that can be fungible, I mean, meaning it can change, especially if you have somebody who is consciously putting out food every day. So if they see a few more cats, they may put out some more food. So the carrying capacity can change, but there's some realistic limit, right? Like even if a caretaker starts off, I've seen situations where there were 2 cats and then in 2 years there were 30, but at some point it stops and the amount of food is not increased and the amount of shelter available doesn't change. And you hit a ceiling on how many cats any particular location can support. So again, this is limited by food, by shelter. Kitten mortality is very high among outdoor cats. The cats, the size of the territory, and then also what I list as tolerance, which is in every neighborhood, there's usually a some level of tolerance for the cats. That level may be very high or it may be very low. But if you keep having a growing cat population, you're going to hit that tolerance limit, and then people are going to start taking action. They may start try calling animal control, and you start to see cruelty, poisoning, you know, animals being trapped and abandoned, things like that. There's a limit to how many cats a particular area will put up with. So all of these things mean that if you're at the carrying capacity of a particular location, it's going to stay there. So in our 10 cat colony, we'll go back there. If we do nothing, and let's say these cats have been here for a while, the cats have been present for a few years, and there are 10 today. Well, if we do absolutely nothing and the amount of food being put out doesn't change, then there's a year from now, there'll still be 10 cats there. They're not going to just reproduce and survive like crazy. They may reproduce, but then you start to see disease setting in and you start to see adult male cats killing kittens in order to eliminate competition. When a cat becomes pregnant, they'll migrate away from the colony in order to try to find a safe spot to raise their kittens away from the threats. So, and you'll see younger adults searching for new territory. So nature finds a way to balance the carrying capacity of an environment with the number of cats who are there. And this concept applies throughout wildlife. You know, there's certain carrying capacity for deer or for whatever animal you're talking about in the environment. So if we do absolutely nothing, we're not going to have, in 8 years, we're not going to have 2 million cats. We're going to have 10. So how do we address this? So this, we start to practice trap, neuter, return, and we put out a few traps and we spay and neuter those guys. And those are the ones we've caught now are the ones in the red circles. So we've caught 3 out of the 10 cats. So the common belief is that we've made progress here in terms of if our goal is fewer cats in the environment, fewer cats coming into the shelter, fewer complaints, we've made some progress here. Now, that may be true about complaints because now we have 3 fewer cats who are engaged in mating activity, which may reduce some noise and things like that. But when it comes to the actual number of cats, the truth is you've made absolutely no progress at all. You've helped those individual 3 cats to probably live longer, healthier lives, but you've done nothing to reduce the number of cats. And why is that? Well, remember, our carrying capacity is 10. We have 3 cats that are fixed, but we have 7 cats that are continuing to reproduce. And those 7 cats will produce enough kittens to maintain the population level at 10 at the carrying capacity. And from a population control point of view, again, if we're aiming for reduction over time, we have not actually accomplished anything. So how do we get around that? And that's where targeting comes in. We don't stop at 3. We work until we can get as close to 100% of the cats at this location spayed and neutered. That gives us our best opportunity for population decline over time. Because now, if a cat gets adopted or one of them hopefully dies of old age, there isn't reproduction going on to replace them. And if the caretaker is well trained and they've been putting out food for 10 cats and now they start to put out food for 8, you're not attracting new cats into this colony and you're going to have your best chance of seeing fewer cats going into the shelter from this location, no more kittens, fewer, and again, a declining population. This is what we call colony-level targeting. It's about that particular individual group of cats that, and we define a colony as a group of cats that shares a common food source and a common territory. So that's what these guys are doing. All right, so let's look at this concept of colony-level targeting on a broader with a broader vision for the entire community. So this is where we take our trip to the famous Ferrellville. And in Ferrellville, we have what I think is, a hypothetical that is typical of the situation that you're facing and that almost all TNR programs face, which is there are 100 cats spread throughout the community. But at any one time, let's say, for the year 2024, you've only got 20 surgeries. So you can't just go out and fix all 100 cats. You have to do, you're limited to 20. So the question becomes, how do we address that? Now, if we just do first come, first serve, or we just catch the easiest ones, or we just put traps out everywhere, this is what it's going to end up looking like. You're going to catch 20 cats and they'll be TNR'd. But look at what we just talked about in terms of colony level targeting and trying to get as close to 100% of a group fixed as possible. You haven't achieved that anywhere, right? You've got spayed and neutered cats randomly spread out throughout the community. Again, great for those cats, not great if your goal is population decline or intake reduction. Because in no one group have you reached a high enough sterilization rate where the unfixed cats won't compensate for the loss of reproductive capacity. Now, if we shift this paradigm and we still only have 20 surgeries, but we're more strategic about it, and we do colony level targeting, and we try to get as close to 100% in any group that we touch, this is what it looks like. And you can see how the surgeries now are more concentrated. And in some of them, we've gotten 4 out of 4, or 2 out of 3, or 6 out of 8, or whatever it is, as we try to get close to 100%, and we start to, within that particular group of cats, start to maximize our opportunity for the population to go down. So this is what colony level targeting looks like on the grand scale. Now, this is still not, remember, our goal is to maximize the impact of our resources. This isn't doing that. It's better than nothing. It's better than just randomly fixing cats because you're having some impact, but are you having the maximum impact with your 20 surgeries? And what do you guys think? How would you do better? But maybe put that in the question box. What would be a better allocation of those 20 surgeries if we want to achieve population decline? Target one zip. Okay, yeah, you guys got it. That's the answer. Don't just target colonies. Target colonies in a high-need geographic area. So instead of doing random colonies throughout Ferrellville, we're doing all the colonies in zip code number 4. And now, not only have we achieved high sterilization rates within particular groups of cats, we've achieved a high sterilization rate within an entire neighborhood, in this case, within an entire zip code. Why do you think that's important? Why is it better to target the zip code? Why does that improve our chances of lowering the cat population? You guys are right about working in the one zip code, but why? Why does that make any difference? I seem to have stumped you. Prevents cats from migrating. Carrying capacity. Yes. Okay. You've got it. That is the answer, especially the vacuum effect. So when you look at zip code number 4 now, and you ask yourself, well, as this cat population starts to go down, right, and instead of 20 cats, maybe we're down to 15 or 16 in a year or two, what are the chances of other cats moving in? Now, remember, at the borders in the other 3 zip codes, those cats are all bumping up against their carrying capacity. So they're looking for new food sources. They're looking for new territory. And if you've got a declining population in zip code number 4, potentially resources could be opened up. But when you're talking about large geographic areas like this in real life, the migration that we're talking about, the arrival of new cats, other than, you know, those who are abandoned, is only going to be at the borders. It's not going to be within zip code number 4. So that's going to minimize the amount of migration that happens and help you protect the gains that you achieved in zip code number 4. But also, let me point out, ideally, you wouldn't stop at zip code number 4. You would do that in year 1. And then in year 2, you would go to zip code number 2. And after 4 or 5 years, then you would have gotten the whole community. You wouldn't be spinning your wheels by doing it randomly. You would be leaving behind these areas of population decline. So vacuum effect is such an important concept when it comes to doing what we call community level targeting. I want to go into it in more depth so that you guys leave as experts on what the vacuum effect is, because I know that term gets thrown around a lot. And we have this vague idea of a vacuum and cats coming in to fill it, but it's important to understand the real actual dynamics behind what's going on. So let's look at this one colony of cats that hangs out behind the supermarket. Couldn't find a graphic of a dumpster, so I used a garbage can. But the idea is that every day the grocery store throws out a certain amount of food, and then the cats are free to go rummage into the dumpster and have a meal. But there's only so much food to support 10 cats. So we have 10 unaltered cats. They're all eating out of the dumpster. Once there's more than 10 cats, then the things we were talking about starts to happen, like disease and migration, because there's only so much food. And grocery stores and commercial areas are great for this kind of example, because the food source is kind of fixed. You know, they're going to pretty much throw out the same amount of food every day. They're not going to have like wide variations in what's available. So we're here. Somebody complains. They decide, all right, we're going to trap the cats, take them away. Unfortunately, if they're feral, they end up euthanized. But here we are. No cats, right? So problem solved or no? What do you guys think? And why is that? I mean, you're right. There's no migration, but why? You're right about migration, but why would they migrate here? Food source, resources. Yes, exactly. Remember, this grocery store is not like some little island off by itself. It's part of a neighborhood, even though, and those surrounding areas have their own free roaming cats and their unaltered felines. And all you've done is right smack in the middle of all these other cats that, again, remember, they're reproducing faster than the food sources available. So they're going to be looking for new food, and you've created a vacuum, right, in the middle of this, because there are cats everywhere. So what happens is you have an unutilized food source and shelter, and you've created a vacuum, And it's usually within a short period of time, Adam and Eve show up and they look around and they say, no competition. Good. Enough food for looks like at least 10 cats. Let's stay. Let's move. Let's settle down and raise a family. And then within a couple of breeding cycles, you're right back up to 10 cats. And your population reduction was nothing but short term.
Our friends in the Great White North want to hear from you. Humane Canada, the Federation of Humane Societies and SPCAs, and the convener of Animal Welfare in Canada is looking for presentation proposals for its annual signature conference, the Summit for Animals. This conference unites the animal welfare sector once a year in a different Canadian city. In 2025, it'll be held in beautiful Montreal from April 27th to 29th, and they have just opened their call for speakers. If you have insights, knowledge, or experience in animal welfare, consider submitting a presentation proposal by September 30th. Educational topics for next year include marketing, shelter and community medicine, farmed and wild animal welfare, community-based sheltering, fund development, and more. Visit humanecanada.ca/summit to learn more and submit your proposal. In a recent study, 97% of respondents said that pets are family. Communities can play a vital role in helping to keep families together, whether it's reuniting lost pets with their owners, donating pet supplies or funds for pet owners in need, or offering short or long-term fostering. People can help keep pets and their people together. We just have to show them how. Did you know there are resources you can use to help bring attention to the programs you offer to help them do just that? From public service announcements, short videos, printable posters, online and social graphics, and much more. Find your resources at www.petsandpeopletogether.org/campaign-resources. Hashtag be a helper. Would you like to help pet parents and their beloved pets? Pet parents in the Ticonderoga, New York area need your help. The area has few resources, but the Keeping People and Pets Together Pet Food Pantry is trying to fill that void. They provide pet parents with food and supplies as well as low-cost spay-neuter. They need donations and volunteers. To help, go to the Keeping People and Pets Together Pet Food Pantry on Facebook or email one at a time, 09@gmail.com. Do you need TNR resources to share on demand? We've got you covered. Check out our Everything TNR playlist, available now on the Community Cats Podcast YouTube channel. This comprehensive playlist includes all of our free webinars presented in partnership with Neighborhood Cats. Topics include tips for trappers and colony caregivers, best practices for targeted TNR, return to field programs, and much more. There's something for everyone who wants to help outdoor cats and kittens. Free to stream anytime. Just visit www.communitycats.com/TNR-playlist.
So if you talk to animal control officers who were very active during a time when removing cats was the dominant paradigm for animal control, fortunately, it has really shifted in favor of trap neuter return in recent years. But when it was, they would tell you they'd get a call like this, they'd come and they'd remove the cats. And then in 6 months, a year later, they would get a call complaining about the exact same number of cats at the same location. And it just became removing cats from the environment. What we learned is that it created turnover, so new feline faces, but it didn't create reduction. So how do we solve this? So let's go back to our original 10 cat colony, and instead of removing them, we're going to TNR them. So they're all going to get spayed and neutered. Now, one of them gets adopted, one of them moves away, one of them dies of old age, and 2-3 years later, we're down to 6 cats. So we've made progress, right, using TNR. But what's the problem? What do you think? Are we home free now? We can just continue to watch the cat population back? Well, they won't breed back to 10 because they're all fixed. So that's not a problem. Available resources, newcomers. Exactly. Remember, we'll go back to this. They're not alone. Here we are. We've TNR'd one colony of cats. We're surrounded by unaltered colonies. And now at the grocery store, there's enough food for 10 cats. Remember, because the same amount of food gets put out every day. And there's only 6 cats eating from there. So they don't have a lot of incentive to keep newcomers out. In my experience on the ground, when the number of cats matches the food source, so you put out enough food for 10 cats and there's 10 cats there, they're not real happy about new cats moving in, and they will guard their territory to keep them away. But when there's enough food for 10 cats and there's only six, they don't care so much if a couple of newcomers show up. And that tends to be what happens. So eventually some of the gain you achieve through your colony level targeting is lost by this type of migration. So as you're succeeding with your original population going down, you're failing with new cats moving in. And hopefully the decline outpaces the new arrivals. But this is the danger of only doing colony level targeting, which is what a lot of us do. So how do you solve that problem? I will put that out to you. You guys have gotten the answer every time now. Community level, which means TNR the surrounding areas. Absolutely. That's what you do. If you TNR, if you don't just stop at the grocery store and then run off to another part of town, but you concentrate your resources. And so instead of fixing, you know, do the grocery store, take your other 20 surgeries and just do colonies throughout your service area. Instead, if you say, all right, we started at the grocery store, now let's go to the adjoining colony and so on and so, and you continue to do the whole neighborhood, you've eliminated migration. So your only source of new cats isn't going to be breeding. It isn't going to be migration. It would be cats that were abandoned. And if you have caretakers in place who are keeping an eye on this kind of thing, which is one of the advantages to trap, neuter, return, you can pick up those new cats pretty quickly. They're often friendly when you start to have cats originating from abandonment as opposed to feral cats breeding feral cats. And this gives you your by far your best chance of the population going down and staying down over time. That's theory behind community level targeting. And before we move on to real life examples, I want to touch on another myth that's out there to disavow you of it. How many of you have heard of the so-called 70%? Have people heard of that? You can give me a yes or a no, just so I have some. Yes. Okay. So this, okay, for those of you who have, well, I'm glad to see there's a lot of no's actually, because it's a very misleading concept. The idea is that when we go into the realm of public health and we're talking about vaccination programs, so you don't have to, if you want to prevent the spread of a viral disease, like we just had with COVID, you don't have to vaccinate 100% of the population. There's some critical threshold you need to reach dependent on the virus, and at which point enough people are vaccinated that the disease won't spread even to the people who aren't. There aren't enough opportunities for the virus to transmit. And this veterinarian, Marvin Mackey, who's a real pioneer of trap, neuter, return, he theorized, based on some mathematics that were done by Louis Pasteur, of all people, that the threshold for cats was 70%. So he analogized cats breeding to viruses spreading. And if you had a certain threshold of cats spayed and neutered, they would not be able to reproduce faster than they died off, or attrition would outpace growth because there weren't enough mating opportunities. Just like with public health and a virus, there aren't enough opportunities for transmission. If you have a certain percentage of cats in an area fixed, so reduces the mating opportunities that the mating is reduced to the point where it is attrition outpaces upper. And he theorized that that threshold was 70%. So a couple of problems came out of this. One is the concept that there's a threshold and that you need to achieve high sterilization rates. That's a good concept. The idea that it's 70%, so you can get 7 out of 10 like we've done here, and then you can call it quits, that's a bad one because that's not necessarily true. So we have 3 cats left here. If they're all male, we're fine. If there's 2 males, 1 female, you know, we're iffy. But if we've got 1 male and 2 females, we're not going to have attrition outpacing births. So the goal should always be not to get to some number and then quit. It should be to get as close to 100% as you can, because that will maximize your chances of population reduction, as we've discussed. So that's one negative part that came out of this concept taking hold, which was a lot of people thought, all right, I got, you know, 3, 7 out of 10 of the cats in the colony, I can move on to the next one. And that's just not true. The worst thing that happened with that 70% rule is that people, especially people who were against trap, neuter, return, they extrapolated that concept to the community level. So they said, and this was in San Diego County, there was a study, so-called study published, and it concluded that trap, neuter, return might be fine in theory, but in reality, it was completely impractical. And they cited the 70% rule, and they said, you're not going to have population reduction in San Diego County unless you have at least 70% of the cats in San Diego's free-roaming cats spayed and neutered. So they said TNR doesn't work unless 70% of the cats are spayed and neutered. Otherwise, you're wasting your time. That's completely inaccurate. And it doesn't, it's a misconception of the idea of targeting. You can achieve population decline the way we just talked about, which is by targeting. And the more colonies that you get and the more parts of town that you achieve high sterilization rates in, the faster the population of the whole community will drop. And the idea is that as if you have a hole and it's a whole community and it's at its carrying capacity, which in Ferrellville is 100 cats, if you have part of that community dropping in number, the whole is dropping. So if you get 6 fewer cats in zip code number 4 because you targeted it, well, now that means there's 94 cats in Ferrellville, not 100. And if you continue to go a section at a time, eventually you'll see the whole community dropping simultaneously. So it's not about getting 70% or any threshold in the community as a whole. It's about the more colonies in the more areas that have high sterilization rates, the more and faster the whole community's population will drop. So you can make progress no matter how many surgeries you have and no matter how many cats there are in your community if you target. And the more you target, the faster you'll make progress. I want to show you some real life examples because this has all been kind of theory so far. And these are statistics that I gathered when I was a grants manager at PetSmart Charities, and I was in charge of the targeted TNR program and the grants that were given out. So we were able to track some statistics pretty closely. This is the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, and the target area was that lighter area you see on the upper, you know, towards the middle, toward up there where it says University Mall, Busch Gardens. That zip code had a population of about 44,600. It was the second highest source of cats going into the county shelter, into the Hillsborough County shelter. And over the course of a little over 2 years, this project fixed over 2,900 free roaming cats in this one zip code. The way they did it, they were very thoughtful and strategic about it. They had a full-time trapper who was supported by, you know, any number of volunteers. They went block by block. They started at one end of the zip code, the western end, and then they moved their way east, and they didn't take a step forward until what they had already gone through was as close to 100% as possible. So that, you know, they moved in this very methodical manner. They had their vehicle was wrapped to announce the program with the with their phone number on there so people could call up and let them know where cats were. Of course, as they worked in the community, they got to know the people who lived there, who shared information about who was feeding and where the cats were. And they put out yard signs. So they made it real well known what they were doing and where people could call to get help. And then these are the results, measuring intake into the county shelter. And you can see on the graph on the left, that was the target zip code. And 2009 was the year before the project began. And by the time you get to 2013, which is a year after the project ended, you still see intake dropping. And it dropped almost half as a result of this project. Whereas on the graph on your right, that's the rest of the Hillsborough County service area. And population went down but not, it went down three times faster in the zip code that was targeted. And then interestingly, in outside of the target zip code, after the project ended, as I mentioned, intake continued to drop, whereas it started to level off and even go up a touch outside of the zip code area. So this is a real powerful example of the impact that that targeting had. Another example, this was an academic study done by Dr. Julie Levy at the University of Florida. They targeted that zip code that you see in the middle there in Gainesville, a smaller population, about 18,000, but still an awful lot of cats. And they did a similar thing where they had a full-time trapper who methodically went through the zip code. And over the course of 2 years, they fixed over 2,300 cats. Now, they actually were, a lot of these cats were friendly and they were able to adopt them out through their partners. So almost half the cats were not returned. And of course, that created an immediate population reduction, which is can be one of the advantages of a TNR program if you have those adoption outlets and you're operating on this kind of scale. And then they returned about half of them. So what was the impact on intake into the shelter? The bottom line is that intake dropped by almost two-thirds from the target zip code, and euthanasia dropped by 95%. Whereas, again, outside the target area, there were declines. They were over five times faster where the area was targeted. So we know from these examples that that targeting is a successful strategy when we're looking at intake. I want to point out Newburyport, Massachusetts, where our host, Stacy LeBaron, first got into trap neuter return as the head of the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. Newburyport was really the first large-scale community-wide targeted effort. I don't think they were thinking about targeting, but they did it anyway. There were about 300 cats living on the riverfront in 1992. Every single one of them was eventually either TNR'd or adopted, and the last cat passed away in 2009. So it took some time, but eventually they actually had the free-roaming cat population along Merrimack River go extinct as a result of getting every single cat treated. And you can read about it in the study by Dan Spearer and Peter Wolf. Before we take a break for cat trivia, I want to go over one more study, which is really a fascinating one, and it's the largest scale study that I've seen yet on targeting. And this is one of the suburbs of Tel Aviv, and the population, the human population of this area is over 240,000, and we're talking about 9.5 square miles, 25 square kilometers, and the study took place over the course of 12 years, so it's really quite data rich. So let's take a little bit of a deeper dive here. So the first 3 years, what you're seeing on the slide here on the map, the yellow line is the target area. So those areas outside the yellow line, those are like either not inhabited or industrial, or but where people lived and where the cats were concentrated in this particular community was inside the yellow lines. For 3 years, they did nothing but collect data, count cats, create a very extensive baseline of how many cats there were and what their characteristics were. After they had that information, they went on to the second phase that we call the mixed treatment period. And I'll need to explain this map to you a little bit so you can understand what they were doing. The black areas were where they did targeting. So they really concentrated their resources, and every little dot you see is a cat that was fixed. They did TNR everywhere, but they focused it, they concentrated it in the black areas. That's why you see a lot more dots there. In the gray areas, if somebody happened to catch a cat and bring them in, they would fix them, but they didn't focus on them. So now within the black area, you can see there are purple lines, and that's where they really concentrated, that they put extra effort. So they called the black was like high intensity TNR, and the gray was low intensity TNR. But within the black, the purple was like extra high intensity TNR. And they did this for, you know, close to 5 years, 4.5 years, and almost 11,000 surgeries were done. So within the black areas, they achieved a sterilization rate of 71% of the cats. In the gray areas, it was only 33%. So overall, for the entire black and gray target area, the sterilization rate was 51%. And the results, in terms of population management and control, were not good. They actually measured growth in the overall cat population of over 20%. And in those areas in purple and the black, where they did the highest intensity trap-neuter return, the best they were able to achieve was a stable population, but not a declining one. So if you just looked at this, you would think like, wow, you know, they just spent 5 years doing 11,000 surgeries and all they did was create a growing cat population. TNR must not work, right? Especially targeting. But that third phase, it did high intensity everywhere. They didn't limit it to the black and the gray. Anywhere there was a cat, they were going after them. They poured all their resources into the entire area, did another 11,000 surgeries, and this time the overall sterilization rate wasn't 51%, it was 72%. And then they got results. The cat population dropped by a quarter. The number of kittens was stable. So what they concluded from this study was that spatial contiguity is required when targeting in order to prevent, and that means that areas you are targeting need to be concentrated. They can't be all over the place. You can't do high intensity in one block and low intensity in another and scattershot it throughout a community. Your high intensity has to be everywhere in your target area, not just in parts of it, in order to prevent immigration and having the population reduction reversed by new cats moving in. And so that kind of confirms what we've been talking about, this idea of not just doing colony level targeting, but doing community level targeting. And one of the things I find most interesting about this study is what they didn't do and why they, and when they were doing that first 11,000 surgeries, they had the population go up instead of down. Why didn't that phase work, right? And if you look at the yellow lines I've drawn on the map, those are all the borders between the high-intensity TNR areas where there was targeting and the low-intensity ones where there weren't. And you could see there was a lot of borders. So there was a lot of opportunity for migration to take place between the gray and the black areas, caused that reversal, kind of nullified the population decline that otherwise would have been achieved. So I think it would have been a lot smarter if they were just trying to achieve population decline if they had done this in the beginning and there was only one border and they just picked, we're going to do high intensity on the west side or on the east side. And that would have greatly minimized the amount of migration and you might have seen better results in that second phase.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.